Mr. O'Sullivan, Reel 13. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, we're talking about discipline and Corporal Barker.
Well, you didn't threaten him to his face. Because, I mean, obviously we talked about him among ourselves, what we'd like to do to him and what...
What would you like to do to him?
Well, someone would like to have bloody shot him. Because he was... The atmosphere was... You know, just imagine being lousy, sleeping in a hole, getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, stand to. The food wasn't first class by him. It was sufficient, but you could never be sure what you were going to have for breakfast. It could have been bloody cheese. It could have been anything. The food was there, but it was... And the blokes who smoked, if they didn't get the cigarettes, that was another thing. They smoked more because they had nothing to do. And if the cigarettes weren't there, they got agitated or bad-tempered, and Barker was just a pain in the ass.
Were there other NCOs that you thought were...
No, most of them were. It's a funny thing in the army, if one man is disliked, all they dislike seems to go to, you know, that's the one, and the others get away with it. But they say this with Corporal Barker, Sergeant Holm, and a Lance Corporal. Lance Corporal. Merrick. A Lance Corporal Merrick. Well, the Lance Corporal was... Nobody took a deal of notice of him. He was non-existent in a way. He was a corporal in charge of the boys' anti-tank rifle, if he were, you know. But really... He was a negative sort of a person, and there was never really a big... Nobody took a lot of notice on him. He was above us. He was in charge in some respect. But he was all right. But, as I say, Barker was just disliked. What happened to Barker?
What did he do that annoyed you then?
He tried to maintain barrack room discipline in forward positions. You can't.
And other NCOs didn't do that?
No, they were much more relaxed. Sergeant Tom, if he wanted you to do something, he'd come in, he'd come to you wherever you were, and he'd say, right, you and Hudson, down on the boys, 1,200 hours. No messing. And do it discreetly. Go down, just... You don't show yourselves to the... You could walk down to the boys' anti-tank rifle, but in sort of a gully sort of a thing. You could get down without being seen by the Germans. So just use your common sense, and you'll be relieved at 2 o'clock. If you're not relieved at 2 o'clock, stay there. But he would come and explain to you. But Barker was just the opposite. He wanted to march you down, you know.
So you're under German observation in these forward positions?
Well, the same as I was under our observation, really.
Were you issued with binoculars?
No.
Did the NCOs have binoculars?
It's the officer had them. That's all the NCOs had them. But if you were sent to a forward observation post, then there'd be some binoculars there.
And what could you see when you had those?
I don't know, they were got sent. So obviously, they could see me.
Now, you're in this position for 6-7 weeks.
I don't exactly know how many weeks you were in that position, really.
But a fair period of time. And did you ever fire your guns in anger at all over this period?
Not until the last day. Never shot at a thing.
And what about casualties yourselves from enemy action, from shells?
There was just one lad injured from a shell, a mortar shell.
And what about medical cases? You know, people did anybody come down with any ailments that you can remember and had to be invalided down? What about air activity over this period?
Very, very little on either side. Very little. The only aircraft, that German aircraft I saw all the time I was in Africa, was 3 Stukas. And I think we once saw an English not a Spitfire, but a similar Hurricane with her. And that's, we never saw a lot of air activity at all.
Now, during this period, were you able to keep in touch with people at home, letters?
We could write letters, but all letters were taken into Platoon HQ, where they were read by them. Whether they got sold to England, I don't know. We got letters from England. I think we had maybe had four or five, half a dozen while I was out there. Some of the lads got parcels, and Young Hudson, he never got a letter all the time he was out there, but he did get a pair of gloves from his mother, a pair of khaki gloves, I mean. But there weren't even a lettering with his gloves. We didn't get a lot of letters.
And what about your ability to write letters home? I mean, were you allowed to write a certain number, or could you write as many as you wanted?
You could write as many as you want, but all letters had to go into the return office, mm-hmm. and they was read by the officer commanding and what happened to whoever that, I don't know. I can't ever remember my mother saying that she'd got a letter saying that. You know, I mean, if we was only there 6 weeks, it would take that long time to get home.
And what about?
Because most of the letters we received in Africa was forwarded from Campbell in Surrey.
Was there any kind of airmail? Were there like special letter forms that you were given, or
was that done in use? Just an ordinary letter. You just wrote it and wrote it.
And what about news? You know, news of what other activities on in the front and other.
Any news came from the company office. It was every two or three mornings, every third morning or so, the major would say, "Well, we're advancing on this front, and we're held up here." Or when they said the front, we had no bloody idea where they were. I mean, Montgomery was advancing from. Was it Montgomery advancing from Egypt? From coming up there? But I mean, we didn't really know where we were in conjunction to the rest of the army.
So, what did you feel about this? I mean, you were in these positions and they were completely static, and you've been there a while. What did you think was actually going on your section of the front?
Well, we thought the weather war had finished in Africa. We thought we were just there for a... We was browned off because of the inactivity. And not a lot of news from anywhere. You know, not genuine news. I mean, the letters we got, as I said, most of them had come from Campbell, so there was nothing in them.
Now, you weren't firing your guns in anger, but were you practicing with them?
No.
So you'd never actually fired them in those 6 weeks.
No.
You cleaned them.
We made sure they were clean, and we cleaned them every day. Because if it wasn't wet and muffy, it was sandy. It was dry and dusty.
So what kind of condition do you reckon you were in at the end of this period, as a unit?
As a unit, we was all right as a unit. We was, but everybody was browned up, really well browned up.
And then what happened?
Well, we stood till one morning, and that was the morning I changed places with Hudson, which was the first time we'd ever done it. And I went on number two, Brenwith. As number two on the Brenly Corporal Barker, because Hudson didn't, he said, for God's sake, go with him, Sullivan. I said, sorry, I just can't stand him. I was good too, and we all went into, Hudson went in my position, which was further up the hill, and it was, well, the Germans could see me, obviously, more than we could see them, because the first person to get shot was your Hudson. And then me and Bach was in the boat, slipped in for the Langham. There was very little movement. And we'd gone into the slip trench without a water bottle, because we just thought it would just be a normal stand to, and I was stood till and I would stand down. And then we got Sergeant Major coming round. How much ammunition have you got? Just two. So we threw some more magazines for the Bengal. And we said, throw some water. Said, I've got the water bottle. And he threw us the water bottle, but the water bottle hit the front of the trench and went just in front of us. And we, of course, when we had no water, we were thirsty. And we looked at this water bottle and there was nothing going on, no activity whatsoever. So I thought, oh, I'll it. And I nipped over the side of it, grabbed the water bottle, jumped back in, and ding! And some of the German fired just as much as they were wicked to have you. And then all hell got loose. We abandoned the forward position because it was being, you know, we couldn't hit anything, but it was, everything was going at the forward positions. So we went back over the hill into the rear positions. The captain, I think he was just a well flat army cap. You know, with a peak. He had that on this morning. Everybody else had to stay on it, but he had his. And the Germans eventually took the top of the hill where we were. I mean, they didn't take it in 3 or 4 hours later when they actually took the hill top. And this officer said, we'll charge it with bayonets. That was a disaster. And we ended up cutting our stems with bayonets.
Could you just describe that process of well, it's that.
There was 5 or 6 of us. There was Rose, Lockwood, me, the captain, another lieutenant, and one or two more. And we fixed bayonets, and we were going to take the top of the hill back, and we charged up, and the bloody machine gun fire was horrendous. So we got so far up, and then we just turned and we went back down. And as we was going down, Reggie Rose run through a cactus bush. Oh, he said, oh, you're up your bloody foot, it's cactus. And we never got anywhere near him, taking that over. And then all of a sudden, there was all of us. And that was it, we were dead.
Could you describe that process of how they...
Well, they just come in. The blokes all go take the top of the hill first, come over the top of the hill, and then machine guns. And I don't know what they call their guns. And it was much better than ours. And they just fired and stopped and fired and they just Sergeant Major put his arms up and that was it. And they rounded us up and he said, "For you, the war is over." And they could speak English as good as they could. And the first thing they did was go around looking for cigarettes and food. They took all the compo rations that was left. They took most of the cigarettes. They didn't take all the cigarettes. I had 50 cigarettes and I didn't smoke. They didn't take them. They collected all the weapons. I don't think they ever took them with them. I just think they just put them all in a pile. They didn't take any personal items off us. Well, they didn't take them anyway. And then they just marched us down to the road where the boys entertained the rifles. And we sat on that roadside until the German lorries picked us up.
Now, just to stop you there, how long do you think the action lasted between the first gunfire and being captured?
We was in the bag by 12 o'clock. And it would be, 6 o'clock in the morning when it first started. It didn't last 6 to 8 hours. Our particular area, I mean, we don't know what happened at the other.
So that was A Company, you think?
It was A Company, but we never had any... we never attacked them. We were always in defence.
Except for the bayonet charge.
Except for the bayonet charge, and that goes nowhere.
And how far do you, how much ground do you think you covered in this bayonet charge?
About 15, 20 yards.
That's all.
That's all.
And how many men were there, do you think, at this time?
4 of them got killed, and they left me and Reggie Rose and Lockwood. The officer got killed. The lieutenant was killed. The lieutenant was the only man I saw throw hand grenades. We got far enough to the top of the hill for him to throw hand grenades. But he only threw 2 or 3 and he was shot down.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Corporal Barger and the Bren gun when you were in the weapons pit. Were you able to engage the enemy then before?
We fired the Bren gun, but we couldn't see him. We couldn't. There was. We never really saw them until they come over the top of that hill. We were firing at gun flashes and that sort of thing.
What about the kind of control of the battle? You've mentioned that you had 2 officers with you at this point in your positions. Were they able to communicate with the other companies? And
I never saw any communication with the companies. But it was, as I say, was too busy looking after themselves. But it was... When I watch these films, these battles in our control, it never happened. Not in our position. It was just a shambles, really. I mean, we went on stand. That's how lax we were. We went on stand two, and the idea of stand two was in case there was an attack, and we'd only 2 magazines per Bengal. You know, in a forward position. The sergeant major had to throw some more. Which it showed how lax we'd got.
What do you think was the reason for that?
Because of inactivity. And we just weren't up to... Nobody had any idea what to expect. Nobody. From officers down to the last man. We had no really idea what would happen.
And what did you think when this officer decided on a bayonet charge to...
Well, we just did it. Yeah. That's the benefit of army. You don't think. You don't. It's the same with... When them Stukas came, we just automatically went down into the... out of the way. You don't really think about it. You think about it later, and that's when the reaction sets in.
And in terms of the German troops, how did they strike you compared to yourselves?
Marvellous and bloody fit. They came up that... Where we'd struggled up these hills with camphor rations, and they came up there like bloody gazelles. They really were... I don't know... And the weapon, the firepower was far superior to ours. I mean, while you was up in Bolton, shooting a Bolton at the Enfield rifle, they've got 20 bloody rounds away, haven't they? I mean, the automatic weapons, we just ain't got them. And the Bren guns, it's a good gun for, same as the Vickers. The Vickers was never fired at all in that encounter because they never came on the fixed line where the Vickers was set for. And the Vickers was in too low a position. The Vickers was set too low in the positions to be any good in the forward line. They were on a fixed line, and they were never used, the Vickers.
And I mean, about how many Germans could you see as they were?
When they come over the top, about 30. They come from all sides of us.
And did any of their equipment, their uniform, did anything stand out about that they're kind of...
No, not really. It was all the camouflage stuff. You know, camouflage, didn't it? It's called it camouflage stuff. But they didn't even have steel helmets on.
What did they have?
A lot of them didn't have anything on at all on their heads.
You mentioned that your officer...
A lot of them had glasses, but there were sunglasses. You know,
You mentioned that your officer didn't wear a steel helmet either. Why was that?
Just something. There again, you see, it stood to that particular morning, and lax, and he was the only officer I knew who wore the stiff army cap, you know, the round flat thing. We was lax, weren't we?
And in terms of how many, you know, in the enemy attack, do you think they suffered many casualties in terms of?
I didn't see a lot of it. I saw, there was the casualties I saw was on our side. The two officers were killed in the, when we made it in the charge, the bayonet charge. There was two or three lads killed at the same time. Sergeant Orme, he was shot in the lower part of his stomach. And I can see him now laid on the floor. But I didn't see any dead Germans at all. It was a shambles. Our particular platoon. What happened on the other side, on the other sectors, I don't know.
So the battle with the other rifle companies was completely, you didn't really know what was going on?
No, no idea.
So you were taken prisoner, you were at the side of the road. I think you mentioned that the Germans could speak English.
Both of them.
Did you have anything else to say to them or them to you at this time?
They just said to you, the war's over, you're very fortunate. You're going back to a prisoner war camp. And as I say, they didn't take any personal things off us. And I had cigarettes left. And they took us down to the deserter, didn't they? Mm.
Now, just to keep us in where we are, you said that Sergeant Orme was wounded. Was he given any treatment by anybody?
By the Germans. The Germans took him. The Germans, there's two, the Germans had some medical men. We hadn't any medical men in our, we hadn't any medics. And the German medics laid him out and they put his coat under his head and that's where he was laid when he was marched away, and that's what made me think he was dead. And one of the other two officers, all the lads when we went in the bayonet charge, whether they were dead or not, I don't know, but they were definitely shot. And Hudson was definitely dead. He was the first one to die.
Now, obviously, you were in this charge, and you were under fire. Had there been anything in your training that had prepared you for actively being on?
Well, we'd use the bayonet, you know, in a dummy. Would have been better off to, if we could have gone out there with automatic weapons, bayonets is, you've got to get to a German or to an enemy with a bayonet before you can do any good with it, isn't it? You know, I mean, we were never going to get that close. But if we had automatic weapons, we'd have been on a more equal footing.
And were you completely within their view as you charged?
Yeah, well, I was top of the hill and we were charging up towards them. And they must have thought we were the idiots. They must have done. A line of men shouting, and it was only when we got near enough for the lieutenant, he started to throw Mills bombs. And I mean, as soon as he started throwing them, he was the first one to get really fired at. I don't know why we didn't get shot. We were in then. We must have been a bit further behind them, wasn't it? I don't know. The captain was in front. I'll give him that. He was a brave idiot. When you think about it, and I've thought about it many, many a time, to charge up against some automatic fires, there was no way I was going to get near enough to them.
So in terms of what you'd been trained in England, you're being trained, you know, to fight as a platoon and as a section in a certain way. Did any of that?
No.
So when you actually did charge, it was as what, just as a?
As a group of seven men. It was just the captain trying to rally us, I would imagine. And I never saw anything of the sergeant major until he put his arms up.
Where do you think he was at this point?
He'd be in the middle of it. He'd be in the central area. He was in charge of ammo. Sergeant Major was in charge of ammo.
And you remember what he was called?
No, I can't. I haven't seen him. He fell about 6'2".
And was that the company sergeant major?
He was the company sergeant major, yeah. The regimental sergeant major was a different bloke altogether. He wasn't with us, so he was in the HQ company.
Now, the Germans had automatic weapons. Did they have any artillery or mortar support during the battle?
No.
Did you have any of that?
No. We did not in our section. None at all. And I mean, I think the attack was that unexpected that nobody was ready for it. Either the artillery or any of the officers in charge of the foresters, you know, the top officers.
Now, I think off the tip you mentioned that your old regiment, the Lincolns, you had an encounter with them before you were captured.
Came out the night before.
Could you describe that?
Me and Barker, and we always, me and us always worked together, and we Barker. This was after the incident of where Hudson had fired the boys' rifle. We were down on the roadside, it was dark, and all of a sudden we had these, some noise come past us, and then some marching. Some of the lads were obviously, when we thought there was our mob coming out, Lincolns, we talked to one or two of them, and this. And some of them I knew, I'd been in the lunch with them. And they said, "All right, Sullivan, we'll be here in the morning." And even then we didn't really realise, because they did come the next morning. And even then we didn't, you know.
So
what they said in a joke in there really happened. And that'll be the 6 months coming out. And that's why we was in the support position, or supposedly. We was behind the Lincolns.
Mm. Now, you were taken prisoner, you were waiting at the side of the road. You mentioned German trucks came and picked you up.
Yeah.
What happened then?
There was one going up the front, coming one way was German troops in trucks. And we were going the other way. And one lad jumped out of our truck into a German truck with two hand grenades. And he killed himself as well. But he killed a few of the Germans. That's not the Germans, that's how they get killed.
Could you just describe that in more detail?
Well, there was no detail. He was in a wagon in front of us. There were open wagons. And they were just piled in. And he must have had a couple of hand grenades. And there was no speed. You couldn't go speeding on these roads. It was very slowly. When the Germans come past, we was you know, looking at them and thinking, and we was going that way, and all of a sudden this lad went out of the truck in front of us into one of the German trucks, and then grenades went off. Then we all stopped. So we stopped further up the road, and everybody had to be searched. And that's when they took everything else, you know. But even then, they didn't take me to the accident. But it was very end.